I think for me, it's Clay Holmes. And look, he still has to pass that test of can he do it for 6 months, because he never has before as a starting pitcher. But he has already passed the test of does he look like a legit major league starting pitcher? And for me, it's the repertoire. He's got 3+ pitches, above average pitches, when based on the stuff plus metric. And that includes his changeup, the kick change, which is a new pitch for him. And it's not just sort of a show me changeup. It's a really, really good pitch. He's used it to get some big swing and miss. So for me, Clay Holmes, again, he still has to do it over the balance of the season, but I like what I see so far. And one other thing I'll say, I do believe in Tyler McGill as well. The difference is he's never been healthy through a whole season. He's never managed to really sustain it, whereas I think Clay Holmes has a chance to do that.
Yeah, I'm with you on Holmes. And Senga, to me, is kind of a given, a little bit of a given. He does have to have more length, as we talked about. But I think McGill is really interesting. I'm starting to believe in him a lot more than I did, just because, you know, he, it was kind of under the radar. It came up at last September from the minors, and he was really good in September. Just seeing he's becoming a more complete, more well-rounded pitcher. He's got that sinker and the changeup that he's added to the four-seamer and the slider. So he's got much more of a well-rounded game and well-rounded arsenal. And he's starting to go a little bit deeper into games. I think there's a lot there. He's got the stuff to do it. It's always been a question. Sometimes the game speeds up on him. I think he's getting there mentally as well.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, May the 5th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG, and I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, premium content for less than a cup of coffee a month, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fan-Sided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Well, don't they know weather and Sunday Night Baseball and all the things that happen throughout the baseball season interferes with our schedule? Another Monday edition of the Talking Mets podcast. It's actually going to become somewhat of a theme over the next couple of weeks. Actually, the Mets next Sunday have one of those really early, I guess it's going to be on Roku or Peacock. I don't know, when baseball does one of those things where they, they basically put a game on almost like late morning to promote some kind of streaming service. So that'll be a normal Sunday for us. And then a couple of Sunday night baseballs, including Memorial Day weekend. Mets have a little bit more of a tricky schedule. They're going to be going to some historic ballparks in Yankee Stadium in Boston later this month, the Dodgers, the Cubs. So some real test series, which is interesting because by the time we get to this first third of the season, which we call the getting to know you phase, I think we're going to have a pretty good feel of this Mets team, because I think the competition's going to heat up, and June's going to be a bear. I mean, they're going to be on the road most of June, a Colorado series, which is never uncomfortable, West Coast, LA. So things are about to heat up. Things are about to get a little bit tougher, and it stinks because over the last week, there was the self-inflicted wounds in Washington, D.C. We knew about that with the bullpen, with bad defense, some of the things that we talked about the Mets needing to clean up. But over the last week, since they won the opener at Citi Field against the D-backs, the Mets have just had some bad luck. One-run losses, good pitching at times by the opposition. Yesterday was your classic why baseball is such a frustrating game. You know, they talk about golf. They talk about golf. What is the old John Feinstein book, A Good Walk Spoiled, is what golf is all about, how frustrating it could be. Anybody that's a golfer could understand that. Baseball, to me, sometimes could be equally as frustrating. I know the other sports could be. Look, the NBA could be frustrating. Hockey could be frustrating. I'm sure the NFL could be frustrating. NBA, you miss open layups. You just can't get things going. But baseball is one of those things where if you hit the ball hard and you hit it in the right spot, you expect to be rewarded. And throughout the season, the Mets' expected batting average has been pretty solid. I mean, let's put it that way. They've hit into a lot of bad luck. Yesterday was a culmination of a lot of that. We could, and there is some self-inflicted wounds. Their execution with runners on third base in less than two outs, specifically Mark Vientos the last week, striking out, having some not-so-great at-bats. But, I mean, the Mets yesterday were a bad umpiring call away, and a Juan Soto tremendous robbed home run catch away from sweeping a doubleheader. That's how close they were to this morning being a really good morning. And on the flip side, the Mets are still nine games over 500. They're still on pace to win over 100 games. They're a couple of games ahead of the Phillies. But you've started to see a little bit of the regression to the mean, and I think that might be part of that. They won so many close games earlier in the year in the cold at Citi Field and how the pitching just carried them that you knew eventually as they started to score runs, as they started to hit the ball, as you expected them to, that there was going to be that, you know, flip over. And, I mean, even Steve Cohen has talked about it. Steve Cohen talked about it even with John Heyman and Joel Sherman about on their podcast about how, you know, enjoy it because you're going to have those patches. You're going to have those rough patches. And I think the Mets are headed to their first real test. They took care of business. They got things done in April. They were able to, navigate the situation they're in with the starting pitching. And now they headed to some meatier parts of the schedule. So that's really where they're at. You don't need a half hour, 45 minute hour show to talk about that. I think the conversation we have, and we're a couple of weeks away from really me, like I said, sitting down and saying, okay, who are the 2025 Mets, and what do they need to get to where they want to get? And as far as the fans, if you, depending on what quarters of social media you go on, whether it's emails to me, fan groups on social media, on X or Facebook, whatever. I mean, the funny part is the fans, even though I've talked about this, and Steve Cohen actually talked about this on the podcast with Heyman and Sherman, which if you haven't heard the Cohen interview, I think you should. The fans still have a little bit of that PTSD from the yoke. I don't see the yoke, putting its ugly head out there. You want to talk about injuries to Minter and to Jesse Winker and Danny Young and things like that, fine. You could do all that. That's part of the baseball season. What you've seen is, and Montas and Manaea, I mean, the Mets have had some thunderbolts. We call them thunderbolts here. And I think that they've been not minor thunderbolts, but they've been thunderbolts that sting, but nothing that should derail them or change the trajectory of the season. You know, you have something that happens, you know, knock on a lot of wood here, Pete Alonso or Lindor or Soto or a rash of starting pitching injuries, then all of a sudden you have something to worry about there. So the Mets are just going through what is the regular grind, and give David Stearns credit, some of the signings, some of the scrap heap. We do these segments throughout the offseason, the trash or treasures. And last year, Jose Iglesias was the poster child for, you just don't know when you write about those in the dead of winter, when there's nothing else to write about, when some other mainstream sites don't even know these guys exist, then all of a sudden they pick them up. You don't know what kind of impact they're going to have. And I certainly believe now that Winker is headed for the DL, you're going to see another trash or treasure pickup. You've seen it so far with Zokar, guys like that potentially we're going to be talking about and having, you know, maybe a little bit of an impact over here. So I think as we head into this more difficult stretch of the baseball season for the Mets, I think the real interesting, and this will really play out how they're going to go about the deadline. I think as we get deeper into this, I think I see one of the themes as we get into the summer here is the starting pitching. The starting pitching that we had a lot of questions about, the starting pitching that we had a lot of concerns about. There was a lot of criticism over the last couple of years for David Stearns not going after and giving big money to guys like Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell or Corbin Burns. Good pitchers, but pitchers that came with, you know, considerable amount of question marks for the kind of years and money that they want. And, you know, with their exodus away from the Verlander, the Scherzers, and the DeGroms from a couple of years ago, the Mets were left with a rotation that was a big question mark. It was a lot of, these are pretty good guys. I think they could be decent middle-of-the-rotation options. None of them are an ace. None of them are an anchor. You know, maybe Senga could be that guy, but who knows? And how can you win without those kind of pitchers at the top of the rotation? I mean, look at the Yankees with it before he got hurt with a Gerrit Cole. Look at how the Mets built their rotation early in the Steve Cohen era with DeGrom and Scherzer. And even who's having a great year, Chris Bassett. I mean, a trio of really top-notch pitchers in the rotation. And now you've got a former closer. You've got Peterson and McGill, who always have been these up-and-down, inconsistent homegrown players. Griffin Canning, who's been a complete disappointment throughout his big league career and somewhat kerosene on the fire. And then the the ultimate question mark, which is Kodai Senga. How long could he go? How healthy could he stay? And things of that nature. So you came into this season, and here we are. Cinco de Mayo. Happy Cinco de Mayo if you're celebrating. Have a drink on the Talking Mets. And they have the best starting pitching in baseball. It's not even close. It's about a half a run. They have the most value in terms of starting pitching in baseball. And they're ahead of teams like Philadelphia, who have Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola. Houston, who has Framber Valdez. Texas, who has former Met Jacob deGrom, who's coming into form. The Padres, who have Dylan Cease. Pittsburgh with Paul Skeens and have some good young arms. It's not particularly close. I mean, the Phillies, who everybody, and rightfully so, because they've built up these really good starting arms. You saw it. Christopher Sanchez, Lizardo joined the crew over there. You saw how tough they were in the postseason. Even though the Mets beat the Phillies, it wasn't like they blew them out. It was a lot of little things. I mean, talk about the last week of how what could have been. That's pretty much the entire Mets postseason. I mean, that's the crazy part about the baseball season. It's just like you do all this planning, you do all this probabilistic outcome stuff, and it comes down to a bink here, a home run there, a pitch you should have made there. So you have this situation, which clearly the Mets on a 100-win pace, let's just say they stay at a 95-win pace, because I think 92 to 95, I think over the course of a season with injuries and all that could go good and bad, is much more realistic. To win 100-plus games, it takes a lot. And I'm not saying they can't, but those are not the norm, even for the best of the best. So here you have this team. I don't think they'll continue to have a sub-3 ERA as a rotation. Their FIP is a little bit higher. It's about 3.4 or so. So their expected ERA is a little bit higher. But they still have that would still be the best in the league, by the way. They still have a very sustainable situation. Maybe they walk a tad too many hitters, but they've started to trend in the right direction there. They're striking out over a batter per nine, so they're missing a lot of bats. They have a 50% ground ball rate, which is outstanding. They're not allowing home runs. Their batting average on balls in play, actually, they've been kind of unlucky, as well as the Phillies. It's over 300. So even with all the things that you could say, the Mets, what is this rotation? They can't be shutting people down. These are big league hitters. They're not going to smother them even at Citi Field all season. You look at what you have here, and you have quite a sustainable-looking process here on May 5th. However, there is always the however. There's one number that's bothering all of you, and it's the innings pitched. And in a lot of ways, this staff reminds me a little bit of the 2006 Mets. And I'll tell you why in some ways. That team was built on bats and bullpen. Yeah, you had Pedro, you had El Duque. Everybody remembers with Ali Perez and John Main coming in. Steve Traxel winning 15 games when he had no business winning that many games. But that team, very similarly to what you see here, had a lot of starters that we talk about 75 pitches to 90 pitches, which those numbers have improved for the Mets. Those guys were going five innings. After 55, 60 pitches, the numbers exponentially got worse for that rotation. Almost 40% of the innings that year were covered by the bullpen. You had Wagner, you had Hallman, you had the, you know, obviously you Duaner Sanchez, Pedro Feliciano, may he rest in peace, and Chad Bradford, who I loved coming out of that bullpen. And then you had the ultimate missing piece to, you know, a team, almost like their Max Kranich or their Buto, which was Darren Oliver, who was better than those two guys, converted, you know, middleman. And it was a fun year. They won 97 games. They were able to, and they didn't lose because of their pitching the playoffs. They lost because they just got beat by one swing of the bat by Yadi Molina. But you're seeing something similar here because this Mets team, with its current pace of about five innings from their starters on a nightly basis, is on pace to pitch probably well over 100 innings less than the 06 group. And in 06, it was unacceptable. It was an anomaly. Now it's not quite as that crazy. Now, there's another really top team, San Diego, that's following a similar blueprint. And you do see, if you go to Fangraphs and you go to the starting pitching numbers, you do see that they're hanging around Baltimore and the White Sox. And, I mean, the Dodgers even are even worse. They're hanging around Miami. So here, you got three top teams, the Padres, the Dodgers, the Mets, not their starters not going long or deep. And Colorado, the Mets have only pitched, their starters only pitched four more innings than Colorado, five less innings than the Mets in Colorado, and their ERA is over six. Yankees falling into there. So you got some top teams that are behaving from the length of starting pitching similarly to the Mets. And you start to ask yourself, is this sustainable? Everything that you've been taught about baseball up to this point, is this sustainable? Now, last year we saw the Mets, and they were kind of their own outlier, with all the walks that they, and it was more out of the bullpen than the rotation. The rotation did their part out of the bullpen. I mean, they were historically bad with walks. It was amazing they were able to get as far as they were going to get because they were hanging around 100 lost teams with the amount of walks that they produced out of their staff. That's been cleaned up. So now you've got this other anomaly this year is the innings for the starter. And it makes sense. The starters hit 75 to 85 pitches. The numbers as they get to that point start to increase. They're getting better. It seems like they're pushing them a little more because the numbers have gotten better. Just a little over a week ago, it was a high 700 OPS when they were in that danger zone. Now it's about a 700 OPS, which is still much higher than the early part of the game, but it's manageable. It's not this egregious number. And you're going to the bullpen, and you're asking the bullpen on most nights to get 12 outs. And in some, you know, and that's a lot of outs. Luckily, they have Buto multi-inning. They have Kranich. They've been able to shuttle a couple of guys and bring guys in at this point. So, they had no point in the shuttling. Waddell came in with an opener situation. Hageman has come in. Hennessy's Cabrera, who pitched well yesterday, has come in. Davinsky came in. Warren, they've got, and these are not bad arms. They're trash or treasure arms, but they're not bad arms. And even though Diaz has been shaky, he's starting to look more like Diaz. Brazenban has been a godsend for the Mets. Reed Garrett, who I predicted to be a breakout candidate, has been everything that we, you know, and better than what we had hoped. You know, Stanek has been shaky, but, you know, he's still a very viable, you know, I would say, you know, sixth, seventh inning leverage arm. I don't think he's a backup closer. I'm not so sure about that. But with the Minter injury, the Mets are getting a little bit short, and obviously Danny Young, and now you're looking at them up and down in that bullpen, and you're saying, hey, you know, the nights that you have, you know, no availability from Diaz, now you don't have Minter as the backup closer. Brazenbaum might be that guy. It's starting to get a little bit short and a little bit dicier because you're going to be relying on more Buto. You're going to be relying on more Kranich. You really, again, you don't know. He doesn't strike out a lot of batters who Kranich is. You may be relying on Hennessy Cabrera to rediscover his form. You may actually be relying on an Austin Warren or a Chris Davinsky who have some decent dots on their resume. But, you know, those are not the high leverage names that you expected that you're going to want if it's bases loaded, two outs in the sixth inning. Those are guys at some point that may be getting the call. Because you can't go to Brazenbaum and Kranich like you did earlier in the year because now you have no Minter. And you're going to have to start to maybe space those guys out. I know there was a lot of criticism of Mendoza about how he handled Diaz, giving him a week off. But they're trying to play the long game. And it's very clear the long game is going to be a lot of bullpen uses. And it's going to be a lot of five, maybe six innings out of their starters. I don't know if you're going to see, like you saw late last year, how Manaea went into the seventh and Quintana went into the seventh. I don't think you're going to see that. I have a feeling that you're going to see more shorter outings. Now, the sixth starter situation, that adds another component to it because now you're getting less out of your top starters. So the question I have is, are the Mets doing this because it's out of need? Or is this the formula going forward? Because, by the way, all the people that were banging their hand on the table during the offseason, Mets got to sign Burns, Mets got to sign Corbin. And the only way, and it was reported widely throughout the offseason, the only way the Mets were going to get into a sweepstakes for those guys was if they got opportunistic and the market came down a little bit, a little shorter term, higher AAV deal. Already off the bat, Burns has shoulder issues. Snell has had shoulder issues. So off the bat, you've seen some of that. Even a name who was on a shorter term deal, Walker Buehler, he has some shoulder barking issues. Honestly, one of the best pitchers this offseason in terms of free agency, even Manaea has been hurt, is old friend Luis Severino. Even Yusei Kikuchi, who I like, potentially. Nick Pivetta has been a find for the Padres. It's interesting how things have played out here. They've played out. I know a lot of fans want a Jack Flaherty. I go look up Jack Flaherty here. Jack Flaherty, real quick, how's he faring over there? I haven't paid too much attention. You know, he's okay. You know, he's a little above league average. He's okay. He's not going deep into games. He's got about five innings, which you expected. He's performing about what he did with the Dodgers at that point. You know, went a little bit longer with the Dodgers. So now that you have this situation that is built on, I mean, you saw some talk about the mystical pitching lab. I know a rival executive scoffed at it, like, well, everybody has their own analytics. Maybe the Mets have some brew that they're working on. Clearly, they have good coaching. Clearly, Hefner's at the top of his game. Clearly, they know how to target certain players. Whether we all have the same information, they're targeting certain players, and they're saying, hey, that guy has the right makeup mix repertoire that we can work with. Canning is a perfect example. He was there for everybody. The Braves had him. They knocked him off the 40-man roster. So with that lab and with the way the Mets are going, is this the wave of the future? You can't tell me that the Dodgers, the Padres, I mean, the Yankees, it was wormed into their season because of Cole and Heel both went down. They probably would be a little bit longer in the rotation if not for that. You can't tell me that this is not purposely done. I'm not so sure the Dodgers purposely did it. I think they expected more out of a Snell. But the Dodgers are in the playoffs, they're using openers. I mean, something that I'm not a huge fan of has now become something where I'm like, hey, the other day with Waddell and with Brazenbone, it worked. You know, get those, if you could get five, you know, sometimes only three, but you get five or six outs early. Now you have 21 outs to go. And maybe you get four, you know, 12 of those out of, you know, the length guy, whether it be a Hegeman or a Waddell. And then all of a sudden, you're back to the same, you know, 9 to 12 outs that you were going to get anyway. You're in the same spot. Now, I don't like it, and it's not sustainable, and I wouldn't do it every week. But on a doubleheader scenario or where you're stuck because of a variety of reasons, I'm warming up to it. And they have a guy in Brazenbaum that could do it. I wonder if eventually Craddock will get a shot at that, being a former starting pitcher. As you look at payrolls and costs, as you look at all the things that are part of baseball finance, in 2025, the Mets, I think, and the Padres, maybe, and maybe you'll see the Dodgers do it, and eventually I'm sure the Yankees will try, all these big money teams, all these teams that spend all this money are finally realizing that there's no way I could spend my way out of every scenario on my roster. I have to have value-driven components on my roster. I can't buy everything. I can't buy every bullpen arm. I can't buy every spot in the rotation. Heck, you can't buy, because it's so expensive offense, you can't buy very good at every position on your offensive side, on your positional side of the ball. You have to be able to develop some players. And I think the way the Mets are looking at pitching is that offense is going to cost. Offense is more certain. As much as Soto has had a terrible transition to Queens, but it hasn't been as smooth as you would like. Hasn't been worst case scenario, but it's been enough bad start where it's been a conversation. The comfort in investing on that side, the positional player side, long-term, and playing in the deep end of the pool, seems to be something that the Mets are willing to do. They've done it. They did it with Lindor. They did it with Soto. They may even do it with Pete Alonso. But on the pitching side, what they did with Manaea, a shorter-term 3 or 4 year deal, $20 to $25 million a year, something that if you only get 2 years out of it and you get maybe nothing or blah on the back end, you're not paying them in perpetuity. That's where they're going to go on the pitching side. They're going to try to take these very good pitchers, guys that, and I always say this, I've said this a million times, players like, I use the Steven Matz rule. Steven Matz, at the end of the day, his numbers are back in the rotation. But Steven Matz was a guy that clearly had top of the rotation stuff and showed flashes of it. Now, I'm not here to talk about Steven Matz. That's what they're trying to do with Griffin Canning. That's, in a way, converting Holmes from a bullpen to a starter, what they're doing with Holmes. I mean, Holmes, to me, has been, in some ways, better than Senga. He's been their best pitcher. And impressive. And very sustainable. And I think if you can start getting, if those two guys can get to the sixth and seventh inning consistently, and Senga has, then it may mitigate some of this. But ultimately, the future of starting pitching, I really think, is count. And part of their success, these guys, is let's keep them to about 75 to 90 pitches. I mean, they'll push them to between 90 and 100. Those last 10 are going to be where, hey, I'm only going to give you those last 10 is if I have a cushion. You know, look at McGill with the 6-run lead in Washington. I know you don't want to remember that, but look at that. Or, you know, I have no other choice and I'm going to grind through it. By and large, once they hit the 90 pitch mark, whether it's the fourth inning, the fifth inning, the sixth inning, whatever, they're done. And it's very hard to get into the seventh not hitting 100 pitches. The only way you're going to consistently get into the seventh inning is if you push these guys 110 pitches. I would like to see that. Now, if you're starting to tell me that you're not dealing with your Scherzers, you're not dealing with your Verlanders, you're not dealing with your DeGroms. I don't even know if DeGrom would go that deep anymore. But vintage those pitchers who pitches 100 to 110, there'd be a decrease. You know, the Smoltzes of the world, things like that, where even though they decreased, they're able to figure out, because they're Hall of Famers, how to navigate and pitch, maybe not at a Hall of Fame level, but get the outs they need to get through seven. You saw it consistently with Scherzer when he was healthy in 2022. Actually, the guy in the league that to me is as much old school throwback, and I know he's not a Hall of Famer, but he's very good, and I've always been a fan of his, and I'd love to see the Mets consider a short-term reunion with him, if possible, come this offseason, is Chris Bassett. They picked Kodai Senga over Chris Bassett. I didn't like it. I think Senga, I could see the upside in Senga, but boy, would Chris Bassett in rotation look really good. Who knows what the deadline is going to be all about. And I know that that's going to be a conversation as we get into the what does this team need. You've heard Sandy Alcantara's name a lot. You hear on social media Jacob DeGrom's name pop up. I think Chris Bassett is another name that pops up. It's too early to start targeting names. Look what the Dodgers did last year with Flaherty. And the Cardinals did bringing in Eric Fetty, who was very lucky. Eric Fetty should have been blown out of the water in that first inning. Very lucky that there was gloves right at some of those line drives. But anyway, you know, that's where it goes. You look at a Garrett Crochet. I mean, I know that the Sox are, in terms of innings, one of the best in the league. But you look at a Garrett Crochet. Let's see how many games. He started 8 games. He's actually not. He's going into the 6th inning, which is a lot better. You know, but it's not like he's giving you 7-8 innings. I mean, he's and let's see how healthy he stays by putting those kind of innings in. Because last year he pitched 146 innings. He's at 50 already. And he's only made 8 of, last year he made 32 starts. Only made 8 so far this year. So if this is the new way of doing business, starters going shorter because I don't want to invest in the Bulldogs that are going to get hurt. I mean, look, already if Burns and Snell are toast, even for a part of it's such an albatross on your payroll. And you don't know what's going to happen post 2026 because there's going to be the hawkish owners, the anti-payroll owners are going to try to find a system that punishes the top teams for spending. And I don't think it's just going to be a financial tax. I think the next phase is they're looking over at the NBA. They're looking at how the NBA has restricted the movement of teams like the Knicks. And there was an article actually this past week how this might be the Celtics' last dance with their group because they're getting expensive and, you know, they may not be able to keep all their players. If Jalen Brunson doesn't take a discount, the Knicks don't even have the players that they have now. And I think that the owners are saying that's the model. That's how we stop them. That's how we stop the Dodgers. That's how we stop the Mets. That's how we stop the Yankees. Now, those teams may be getting ahead with investments in other areas so that they can bring up cost-controlled team developed pitchers. But also they're saying, hey, there's only so much development you can do throughout your minor league pipeline. We need more Griffin Cannings, and we can do it. Because Griffin Canning could be in Pittsburgh right now. They could afford a $4.5 million salary. But he's not. And would he be doing the same thing in Pittsburgh? Now, they have their own version, maybe with Andrew Haney. But he was developed by the Dodgers. He wasn't developed by the Pirates. The Mets are doing, finally, everything that you saw them do with the Dodgers have done over the course of the last, decade and stuff like that. So I think over the next few weeks, you have the Red Sox in Boston. You have the Yankees. We have a very good offensive team coming to Citi Field in the Cubs. Mets are going out to Arizona over the next 3 nights. Dodgers come down. This is a test. These are teams that could grind out more at-bats. That can, these starters could get to 50, 60 pitches maybe by the 4th inning. The bullpens will be tested. Maybe there'll be some, areas where on these stretches, the bullpen's been used a little bit, where Mendoza's going to have to push his starter to get an extra 3 outs, maybe go a little bit north of 100, or grind through those final 10 to 15 pitches. Let's see how good this starting rotation is. Now it will be a test. Will this work? And there's going to be some shuttling. You saw Tidwell get a start. I think Waddell might get another start. Are they going to stick with 6 starters? The Mets have about 1 day off every Thursday, it seems, this coming up stretch. So they have some days off. And that will help. So every Thursday, the month of May, they're off. So they have this May stretch may allow them not to have to use the 6 starter and still space guys out. We'll see how that goes. But it's going to be interesting. And if this is the wave of the future, the Mets might have a little bit of a leg up on the rest of the league. Will this work? Well, it worked in 06, but it didn't really sustain itself the years after. Eventually, the Mets went out and got Johan Santana because they knew they couldn't build a rotation with a bunch of number 3s. But even if you go back, and I'll make this one final point because we act like this is new. The 1999 Mets were not exactly I think they only had like 1 or 2 complete games that year, and it didn't come till later in the year. I mean, Al Leiter, of course, did one in the postseason. If the 06 Mets pitched 900 innings out of their rotation, I see, and the 99 Mets did 964 innings. So what's funny is that was considered egregious by 1999 and 06 standards. This is 150 innings worse at this point. So we'll see where it goes. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up your listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We're back with more right after this.
And he chops one slowly to third. Acuna on the charge, makes the running throw right on target. Beautifully handled by Acuna, and that retires the side. He can play, Gary. Tidwell puts up a zero in the first with help from Acuna.
All right, we're back. A couple of quick thoughts here before we wrap up. First, I believe because he's on the 40-man with Winker going on the injured list, I think that Jared Young will get the call. It's early here on Monday. I haven't seen anything yet on social media from the Mets. Multi-position guy, revived his career in Korea, has some pop, plays multiple positions. I think they're going to need more of McNeil in the outfield. I haven't been as crazy about McNeil in the outfield. Maybe as I get older, I get a higher level of standards out there. Also, when you've had Harrison Bader and Jose Siri and Tyrone Taylor manning center field, very hard in the center field perspective to get excited about McNeil. Even with Zokar, he should have, you know, one of the reasons why they scored four runs, I think he misplayed a ball yesterday. Mets defense wasn't great. But McNeil in the corners, maybe right is more his thing, is fine. I have no problem with him out there, and I think that's where they'll go. And I think they're going to need Young to, you know, spot, you know, maybe even as a DH. Young right now, you have Marte as the DH. Young is a he's a lefty batter, so he could come up and split time. I think Marte's better against lefties, and we'll see where that goes. I'm very curious. We talked about him during the offseason, during our Trash or Treasure segment. And, you know, he's a guy that, like the Dodgers, plucked Muncy out of nowhere. He's a guy that has been around a while and, you know, had some power. You know, maybe he's a 4A guy. We'll see where that goes. And then he went to Korea and he went crazy. And has he figured things out since going to Korea? We'll see. About a year ago. Now, Luis Angel Acuna. I'm not ready to anoint him an everyday player. I think he's heading in that direction, and he's been very impressive. Very impressive. I thought how he played third base yesterday, not an easy position. He's really showing a lot of defensive chops, and we have not seen him in the outfield yet. We know he could play all three positions, and I know, and I loved Jose Iglesias, and believe me, I wanted badly for the Mets, just for, not only from a clubhouse perspective, but I thought he, you know, against left-handed pitching, he's got a good bat, and he's, you know, a guy that's great, just a great guy to have on a roster. But when you see what Acuna brings in terms of speed and how he himself is hitting a lot like Iglesias did against lefties and the versatility, I mean, Iglesias was at a point where the Mets weren't comfortable with him at shortstop. David Stern's decision to not bring Iglesias in on a big league contract and block Acuna is starting to look pretty smart. That's why I'm sitting here and he's there. That's why. So just looking at Acuna, the eye test, I really like the patience. He's laying off of pitches. He's aggressive, but he's not overly aggressive. He's taken some walks, which have been impressive. His walk rate is up around 8%, which is aligned with what you saw out of him during his Texas minor league days. Maybe a skush lower than his early days, but as you get to higher levels, it's not that easy to take walks. Guys have much better command and control, way better walk rate and patience than he showed in his brief stint last year when he got called up in September. That was a different situation. His strikeout rate is along the lines of what you saw in AAA. He is hitting way above with the batting average on ball in play. But I think, and someone brought this up with the Mets' struggles with runners in scoring position, sometimes not trying to hit the ball 115 miles an hour and just focusing on contact and finding the hole. The old Jeff McNeil who he used to be, which, you know, I guess that you're never going to see that version again. You're seeing a little bit with Acuna. Now, whether he evolves and starts to hit the ball harder and this is sustainable, we'll see. And maybe he'll come back down to earth a little bit. But even if he does, I've always felt Acuna is a guy that at the very least would be able to give you multiple positions like Iglesias did, maybe, you know, clearly he can hit left-handed pitching, sub in against left-handed pitching, come in for defense. He could be a very good component player. Now, is he evolving into a more important piece to the 2025 Mets as a starter? Remains to be seen. I'd like to see more of him. The speed is tremendous. The fact that you could add stolen bases, similar to his brother who could steal 60, 70, 80 bases, especially in this current climate where you can only throw over twice, that is a huge advantage. A huge advantage. And, you know, I'm excited to see what he could bring. I'm coming around. He was a guy I didn't like some of the things I was hearing about, how he was being bored at AAA, bored in spring training. You know, Lindor came out with those comments. I think those comments were directed at Acuna, and it was a leadership play by Lindor, so good job there by Lindor. You hear nothing but great things about Lindor and his leadership capabilities out of that locker room. More and more you see how important he is and the kind of leadership, old school leadership, talking to players, leadership by example, accountability, you know, having Lindor right to his, you know, depending on whether he's a third base or second, to his right or left, is a perfect, perfect example of who he could be in terms of how he conducts himself. I'm not saying he could be Lindor as a player. He's got a long way to go on that. But I have to say, for a kid that, you know, came over, Mets basically bought him in the Scherzer deal, if he could come in and provide them, here he is, he's 23 years old, he's still very young, even with the component, you know, with a better version of Iglesias, let's just put the expectation reasonable. He can be Jose Iglesias, better defensively at multiple positions, and much better on the base paths. That is a huge, huge upgrade on the component level for the Mets. Huge. And I don't think you could ask for more at that point. That's what I'm asking for. Iglesias was a starter mainly as a component starter against lefties. He was a guy that could sub in for defense. If he could sub in at third base now, Acuna, you might want to think about that with Vientos. I think Vientos has made improvements, but there's still, that arm is great, but there's still some concerns there on that. And then, of course, the base running. And then if you could get him to play some center field, and I keep hearing he can play it at a big league level, but the Mets haven't put him out there yet, probably because they feel he's more valuable on the infield. Well, now you have something. You have something. So a little bit of a mea culpa on Acuna. More to see. There's some numbers like the batting average on balls in play that make you wonder how sustainable his current 298 batting average is. But he hit 308 in a small sample size last year. He's got nearly 100 plate appearances. So that's, you know, 1/5, 1/6 of the way there. I think there is something there. I think there's something there. Not going to be the power that you saw at the end of the year last year. I think that was an outlier. I think that was a look-at-me type of situation. But he's drawn 8 walks already in 84 at-bats. He only had 1 in 40 plate appearances last year. So he's done much better. He's recognizing pitchers better. That's huge. So that'll be the way we end up here. Of course, I want to thank everybody for tuning in on this Cinco de Mayo Monday. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the fan side and podcasting network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Monday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody. Be the Mets. Be the Mets.